WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are we got some fun in this one. Now, this guy comes on every week, and I usually have the coal roofing mug that I hold up. And we're going to start the program this week with just a little bit of fun before I get into some heavier topics and certainly great football over the weekend and championship games. Bill Cole, I moved this week, and I'd like to tell you that I have the coal roofing mug here. I'd like to tell you that I know where I found my razor blades. I don't have the thing that makes them. What is that? The shaver? Is that what Nick calls it? Or Gillette? I don't know. So I'm just in a state of undress. I mean, I went out to Pappas's in Cockeysville. Luke and I sat there with Justin having a proper a seafood club, and I had dribbled like toothpaste all over myself, and I didn't have a spare shirt. And I don't know where your mug is. I'm just being really honest with you, bro. It will return to the set at some point. I've been wearing this shirt for 3 days because I can't find any other shirt. How are you? How was your week? I mean, we had some good football this weekend.
All's good.
Your stream didn't go out, and you missed the end of the Rams game. Then your stream didn't go out, and you missed the Bills game too.
Yeah, all's good. I think we could probably find you another mug just so that there's not a huge lapse of time before you find it. But
the funniest thing is I packed the one I don't use, the tall one that I'm too prone to knock over. So, but the little one, I mean, I drink out of it all the time. It's probably my favorite mug. It's become like a binky. So, you know, like in the morning, it's like the first thing you reach for.
So you're going to notice if we swap that out with a different one is what you're telling me. You're going to notice it's not the one.
I'm a man about tradition, and
All right.
How are you,
that.
Man? How's your week? You watch all football all weekend?
A little bit fragmented, but I got the high notes. Yeah, so, and I managed to catch the end of the last game. So I don't know. I kind of certainly was rooting for Buffalo, so I'm a little jaded.
You have a team. You had an interest in it.
No, just mostly rooting against Mahomes. So I don't know why.
What's up with what you don't like his commercials or what?
I don't know. No. Just rubs probably like root against the perennial winners.
Peyton Manning is a great guy, right? You would admit that, right? If there was somebody you were going to go have a beer with, Peyton Manning would be a great guy to have a beer with.
I think he's wonderful. Yes, I do.
But you hated him every time he dropped back to pass.
I don't know. He's a little different. Less moxie.
Well, when it was him and Brady, face. You had to pick it. You know, it's like picking the Red Sox or the Yankees, right?
I mean, since you brought up Manning, I have watched the Manning broadcast of the games a couple times.
As have I. I've never made it to the second half. I mean, I fall asleep usually.
So I believe there is gold there. I just believe that there are morons managing it. Like, there's no one holding their hands, you know, there's no one helping with the guests. There's no, it's hard to watch, right? Like, there's a delay sometimes, but they are genuinely funny people that you would want to sit and watch a football game with, right? Because
you feel like you're on the couch with them. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But then they bring somebody on who's either uptight or Aaron Rodgers sharing, fiction, as fact, and it becomes sports, shitty sports radio. Then and it becomes the Pat Matt whatever the punter show or whatever.
I
don't know where the middle of that is, where it's PR for Roger Goodell and it's two dudes having a beer with their buddy when it's Drew Brees, right, or whatever.
But I think what makes it golden for me is that, you know, Peyton is the guy who sits next to you at the stadium that predicts every play. Oh, this one's going to be a run. Oh, look, they're going to go deep on this one. And he's right one out of 15. In the stadium, the guy's right like one time the entire game and proclaims to be, he just knows what they're going to do. Peyton is right more often than that. But still, Eli is sitting there busting his balls because he's like, oh, you say it's going to be a run every time, Peyton. It's never a run. That to me is the fun part, right?
The brotherly part.
Yeah, like just the sitting around watching the game. Like, oh, look, they do the same stupid stuff we all do.
So, dude, I'm going to the Super Bowl. I know I said on the air 100 times I probably wasn't going, and I didn't think I was going because of COVID. I'm third boosted. I'm, you know, I have a mask. I
just throwing caution to the wind, huh?
I don't touch people so much. Right. I've been safe so far that, you know, 2 years into this. My issue is this. Going to be there all week. I have lowered my expectations, right? I've lowered my bar. I've lowered the cost of doing it. I've lowered the expectation that it's going to be the greatest Super Bowl ever, the best Christmas ever, right? Because I've done this 27 times. I skipped last year. It certainly feels like my body clock's a little off. I don't know what it's going to be like walking in and seeing a third of the people that I usually see with masks, whether I'm even going to recognize Ron Jaworski when he walks in with a mask. The league is very much mandated, and I spoke to some people very high up there that I know in regard to if you have a press pass and you are doing an on-camera anything, you're doing it with a mask and your guest is doing it with a mask out of protocol, out of law, but out of PR. This is who we want to be as the league in the middle of a plague in winter where everybody's eating chippies and dippies and getting together for their Super Bowl parties, that we don't want people dying because of that. And that's going to be a message from the league. And I hear that message, and it's not, I mean, Billick came on and got political, and it's California. I was in Florida and Texas, and we all had masks off, and look at us. And I'm like, well, that's not going to be me at the Los Angeles Convention Center in a city of 12 million people where people are coming from all over the world and touching people. I mean, I'm not going to be at Mons Venus in Tampa this weekend. You know what I mean? I'm just not going to be there. Right?
Yeah, that's a whole different discussion. But yeah, just – make sure you're journaling the whole time, because I do think, you know, 10 years from now, there are 5 years from now, there are stories to tell through all this. And I don't know exactly what shape or form or fashion they all take. And right now, we're not all really in tune with it because we're all just fried and tired of it. So you don't notice all the things, but you can start to see things that are sticky that are going to be here. And there's this story about how you never used to do that. You used to just walk up and tell the person your order instead of putting it on your phone 15 minutes before you get there. You know, like there's some interesting stories to tell. And I think just what the Super Bowl was, because you have so much experience with going to so many, then there's one you don't go to. Then there's this weird modified version, and then there's whatever next year is. There's some fun stories in there, so just make sure you're capturing weird stuff along the way, right? Because I don't know, it speaks to the bigger societal changes, you know what I mean? Like it's just
it's one of the first times I've gone out of the boat to go do this. Now I'd say this, in Vegas I went in late. My wife and I got there very late the night before the game. We went out on the strip late on purpose where there wouldn't be a million people. There were still a million people. It was 100 degrees, but we were outside. We stayed away from most people. And I think I'm thinking out loud. I went to Chicago, you know, when they were a mess and it was cold as hell. And I wound up sitting at like a bar and having a drink, and it was semi-normal in that way, with some space, but I haven't done much, right? I mean, I've been to Nacho Mama's, I've been to Chaucer, I've been around, I was over at State Fair the other day here, but I'm talking about like getting on an airplane, doing all that. My wife went up to New Hampshire a couple times in the fall and around Christmas time with her family, but I haven't done anything that's felt normal in that way. I did you guys at Crab Cake Tour. I mean, I did, that was like Black Friday, and then we put it away like it cost us at my 30. So December 10th maybe is the last time I've been elbowing up with people where I felt like the plague was coming back. It kind of came on again after Thanksgiving when we all started getting together again. So even I started to think, I'm not going, right? Like, I'm not going. There'll be no bus trip to Buffalo, even when we thought the Ravens might be doing such a thing. I just didn't think people would be gathering. You and I talked about it in November. Like, we wouldn't be gathering. And now I'm getting on a plane to go into the Super Bowl, and I don't even know how to process it because I don't think I'm going to set up on Radio Row at 7 o'clock in the morning and it's going to be normal. And it's going to be, I'm going to want to sit there till 5 o'clock, or that Snoop Dogg's going to come in with a mask on and do Radio Row. I don't know. There might be a whole bunch of cool celebrities that say, you know what? I'm shot up. I'm masked up. It's in LA. It's the Super Bowl. I'm not going to touch people. I'm going to Purell, but I'm going to get out and promote my book or my comedy act or my whatever. And I'll wear a mask and I'll elbow the guy from Baltimore. And there aren't that many of us. There are apparently 40 stations going or something. And there used to be 200 and there used to be 800 auxiliary seats. There are 300 now. So there's just going to be a lot less media, but it's Los Angeles. I mean, I think I would feel differently about this if it were in Detroit, you know, if it were in some place where nobody would be. But I do feel like maybe it'll be a fun experience in that way. And to your point, chronicling a moment in life that's really screwed up and going and seeing this new stadium and the stolen Rams. And
I think it'll be different, right? And you have a unique perspective on being to identify the things that are different, just different, even in the form of how people interact in mass gatherings. You know,
dude, like that's going to be different since 9/11. And then certainly when Trump went into office and how the Super Bowl itself became the Olympics at some point from we can't have a bomb inside the compound. So like the city of Houston, there literally was a zone. There literally was a complete fortress that I couldn't get in. The night before the game, I went out of the zone to go get catfish, grits, waffles, and wings at a place called the Breakfast Club. Exactly the kind of place I'm looking for in May for the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. Black owned in the city, around the corner, not gentrified, certainly coming back to life. But I went in there at 3 o'clock in the morning and they had a jazz band killing it. My wife and I had gone in there at 10 o'clock in the morning, like, and had regular breakfast, and there's a line around the bill. It's fantastic. Breakfast Club with a K if you're in Houston. Fantastic place. I went there at 3 a.m, Ubered over. And I Ubered back, and the place is mobbed. It was like a street party. It was crazy. And I went back 2.1 miles. I mean, I'm talking like from North Avenue to the harbor. Like, not like you could walk it if you knew where you were going, but it was late at night. And I got back to the compound. I said, man, let me off over by like the Four Seasons. I know where that is. I got out and I started walking around the gated city, and I had press credentials. I was staying in the Sheraton inside. I couldn't get in. Took me an hour and 45 minutes of walking. You couldn't get an Uber. It's Super Bowl Saturday night. I couldn't get to my home. So like, you're asking me about Super Bowl things that have changed that like, it wasn't like that the first time around in Houston in 2004, where you were just going out to the Galleria and hanging out. There was traffic. It's Super Bowl weekend. So I've done a lot of these in a lot of different ways. The best ones, I was with my friend out at a Visionary Eye, and he said, best Super Bowls are the ones you can walk everywhere, like New Orleans. And I said, Indianapolis was the greatest Super Bowl I attended from a fan standpoint of all these hicky cult Midwesterners driving in for the county fair. That was the Super Bowl. And the weather was great. I mean, the weather, it was 70 degrees, like on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of Super Bowl week. Families, grandmothers, real NFL fans, Purdue hats, Michigan hats, Indiana. There were basketball games. It was open air. There was bungee jumping and zip lines through the city. It was like,
that's crazy.
If you get me to talk about Indianapolis, really did it the way Baltimore would love to do it if we didn't have like general managers of Little Italy places getting murdered and the firefights. Dude, it was a rough week. I mean, it took me a while to get to that, right? But we're Baltimore people. This was a terrible start to the week for me to be moving to the county.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're going there, huh? So
no, we don't have to go there, but I'm just, you know, I'm thinking about cities and I'm thinking about what you want your city to be and it used to see its light shine. And LA can't shine in the middle. Maybe it can. Maybe it's going to try to. It's bringing people like me in to shine, right? So I don't think they want me sitting alone in a ballroom saying, this sucks. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think they want that. Nobody wants that. Baltimore doesn't want that either. And, you know, when it leads the news, it's just, this was a tough week. I don't think there's any doubt.
I have to assume that unlike LA where, you know, the light shines on them permanently, I guess. Same with like New York or Chicago and things like
when
that.
When I land in the middle of the plague, the Hollywood sign's still on the hill.
Right. Like you go to Indianapolis. I mean, that's a community collecting event. You know, like
if and they you don't had a get, lot of Final Fours and con. I mean, they you know, they're not.
But all of that is gathering their constituents, you know, making sure all the stakeholders are in play, and then going and producing an amazing experience so that people come back to your town that there's no other conceivable reason to go to. So, and I think that's how Baltimore would do it. Like,
well, the World Cup's on the line, right? I mean, if you believe Terry Hasseltine, he can come on the show and pitch me whatever PR he's going to pitch me. But right. Like an open line, Terry, come on by. But I'll believe it when I see it. And this sort of DC's not getting it because the stadium's falling apart and like whatever seed that was planted. Look, I want Baltimore to get. I'm wearing a marathon shirt here. I want Baltimore to excel, and I see these other cities like Indianapolis that stole our team. And, you know, I have no reason. I mean, I'm the one that put the Ursay Beanie baby in the back of Nacho Mamas in Towson. I have no, I had Jason Cole on this week talking football. He wrote an Elway book and called Relentless, and he's the Elway chronicler because he was in Denver for a period of time. And I had Clark Judge on this week, who is the Seifert San Diego Chargers, Steve Young, that era chronicled all that. So like I was trying to paint the history of all this. And he said, blame Ursay, 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 Ursay. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I went to a Super Bowl out there that was pretty good. And I'd love to have a World Cup here, but we need to make it better. And I guess that's what Baltimore Positive's about. And that's what you're saying. Go out to LA and see how they're doing it out there. And maybe you learn something and bring it back here, because that's kind of how this works to some degree. To stop doing things and stop learning in the middle of the plague is death, quite frankly.
It is. But I think the main point is this concept of, our town could certainly use some kind of pivotal moment that might require like a wind change where like this is my assumption because I obviously don't know. The NFL will not allow you to screw up a Super Bowl, right? So you have to have your stuff together. And for us to have to focus on something like that would be interesting to see if that isn't the kind of thing. I mean,
Super Bowls were completely wrecked because I've been to 27, right? Atlanta was a disaster in 2000 and or 99, whatever that one was. The McNair, they had 1 week to plan. They didn't have the 2 weeks between the championship game and an ice storm hit. And it was an ish show. There was 12 inches of snow at BWI when I left on Tuesday morning. It took us 16 hours to get to Atlanta. We flew to Houston Hobby to fly to Birmingham to drive to Atlanta because it was snowing all over the East Coast and everybody got stuck. And then it iced in Atlanta. Awful. Wrecked it. And then the Dallas Super Bowl, I'll never forget this. The ice storm was so horrible. I was at the House of Blues and I saw the angst on the face of Jerry Jones, not like from across the room, like on me. I was in conversations with Jerry Jones where there was legitimate ashen faced. It was a sheet of ice all over the city for 4 days. No buses, all the transportation, getting anybody, forget celebrities, people, regular people, the football players. It was just terrible. And I saw the angst. So you can do all of these things right. And, you know, God forbid it's Munich or it's Atlanta or it's something tragic. Right. You could do everything right. And a rainstorm that blows in 2 minutes before the Kentucky Derby changes the whole thing, you know?
Yeah, it's part of me thinks of like how the Olympics attempts to go into these countries and by pouring hundreds of millions of dollars in stadium and facility builds, that this is going to help prop up those economies. And, you know,
well, the Brazil World Cup, I mean, dude, they're playing the World right. Cup in Qatar next. I mean, like, it's right. going to be 120 degrees. It's not
Yeah, I'm sure there's lots of people who have done the research that show these neglected buildings that end up sucking the life out of those economies because you have maintenance money now.
Google no one Manaus, uses them, so. Manaus in Brazil, and you'll yeah. and that's all you need. Right. Bill Cole's our dude here. Cole Roofing. We're talking some sports and some civics and some Super Bowl. For me, I moved, right? So I'm a mess. I can't find spoons. I can't find cups. It's been like this upheaval in my life. But man, nothing struck me more this week than the death of Meatloaf. And music and people that have been nice to me. I haven't talked about Meatloaf all week. I'm going to find the conversations because he called the show every year and talked baseball. He's a huge Yankees fan. He played rotisserie baseball on the bus. He brought me onto the bus and showed me all of his gadgets before there were gadgets. 1995. Nobody had cell phones. Meatloaf had like some right. sort of toaster oven that gave him rotisserie results in his tour bus.
Do you know why his name is Meatloaf?
Well, he was an actor on Broadway and stuff, and like had a whole stage thing. But no, I didn't Google that. I mean, I know his real name's Marvin neither. Today. Nobody right. called him Marvin, by the way.
Right. That's a kind of a unique one and a very solid one. Meaning, you know what I mean? Like that is
like
the only
Sting.
Name. Yeah, right. That is the only name that that man has. So
like Bono.
Right.
No and one Meatloaf. Calls him Paul Hewson.
Right.
Like Elton Meatloaf, John. Like, no one calls him Reg.
I mean, Meatloaf isn't exactly like the one you'd pick, I don't think.
Well, you know, but, David Bowie became David Bowie because his real name was David Jones and there was already a Davy Jones.
Okay, fine. That's like a name. The man.
Dude, I don't think there are any other Nestor Aparicios in the world, but there are.
Meatloaf, Ness. That's all I'm getting to. Is like the guy embraced the name Meatloaf.
He owned the brand. Yeah.
Right. That'll never sit right with me. Like I can appreciate the artistic ability, but I just don't know. Like it's almost like something you'd have tried to shake. You know, like. He was always the kid that brought meatloaf to school or, you know, every time his friends came over, mom made meatloaf or something, you know, it's just
you want me to Google it and just try to get like a fast answer on this? Get his name? I mean, you know,
that was
an attempt
at a softball because I thought maybe
I want to learn.
It,
so. I do.
Okay.
My father gave me the name Meatloaf when I rolled out of the Baylor Hospital. The loaf came later when he was on middle school when he stepped on a football coach's foot.
Okay.
So meat was like, there was a guy in my alley, Frankie DeBilius, the great late. He would call me Meathead, and Meathead was a name you sure. called people in the 70s, right? 1973, because
today,
Archie Bunker
sure.
or whatever.
Yeah, yeah,
so I don't.
Today.
I mean, did you have any friend? I have a friend in my life that people called Meat. I have a friend in my life people called Pumpkin, who's a dude. Who's kind of right. a burly dude. I'm trying to think of nicknames for people. I know a lot of rabbits, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is totally understandable, right? Like to your point,
I know several crickets.
Right. We all have people in our lives who have these names. That's just one that, you know, mystifies me and I can appreciate it for the uniqueness that it is. That's
make
all.
Make me want to go over to Nacho Mom's, get some meatloaf. Yeah, you know,
right.
Scunny a little bit.
Right.
Dude, meatloaf, I just want to tell this story because I do a little storytelling with you and sometimes with Dennis and sometimes with Leonard Raskin as well about money and different stuff. But meatloaf, I put these pictures up and people were like, you know, where do they come from or whatever. I was a music critic. Meatloaf did not come into my life as a music critic. So my music critic thing ended in 92 when I started doing this, right? So it's 30 years ago this month. You know what? It was 30 years ago. It was January 15th that I walked out of the Sun 30 years ago. How about that? That's crazy, right? 1992. I took a buyout and I drove to Minneapolis to see the Super Bowl. And in my section at the Super Bowl, Donald Trump sat in my section 30 years ago this week. So that's a little crazy. But nonetheless, yeah, Evander Holyfield was in my section too. I sat next to Nat Moore.
Sitting with Trump.
The guy sitting in front of me, the two where my knees were Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. The producers, Prince's producers and Janet Jackson.
I'm still imagining Evander Holyfield and Donald Trump having
the Metrodome, man. I met Steve Sable that day. I'll never forget that. So, you know, you go you make me meander on all these stories. So the Meatloaf thing happened after I got on the radio, because when I went on the radio, I had people in my life that loved baseball, because we were Baseball City, right? I mean, like, yeah, sure. It's 1992, sure. It's 93, it's 94. There is no football. You have to like really think about it a little bit, think about it a little differently, right? But So I had Mike Mazeros from the Smithereens, who just loved baseball. He was in a band with Jack McDowell, stick figure, you know, the baseball player who pitched, yep. And Blackjack and all that. And so I did a show opening day week. And I knew Geddy Lee enough to get him on the show. I knew Rick Nielsen enough to get him on the show. Cheap Trick's bass player, Tom Peterson, his bass tech is the same bass tech that Chip's Enough from Enough's Enough had. Chip played minor league baseball. So Chip was a baseball player in Illinois. So I had Chip on, and Chip's like, "Hey, brother, I can get Rick Nielsen to call in. I'm friends with JY from Styx. We're all Chicago guys. So well, I'll get JY. JY loves baseball, man. He loves the Sox. So next thing you know, JY's calling in, and I became friends with him. But I had interviewed Dennis, and I had interviewed Tommy and knew them a little bit, but never JY. And JY becomes 30 years later, like, in my phone, we're friends. So I did this baseball show in 90. I probably birthed it in 93, not 92, because Kenny and I were still sort of hanging and doing the show. 93, then 94, there was the strike, right, at the end into 95. And then 96, 97, and 98, I got the radio show. So about 6 years, I did a four-hour show that I really invested time into, and anybody that was a rock star that liked baseball, I made an effort to call their agent, call the publicity department in New York that I knew how to do, call PolyGram or Atlantic Records. I knew a lot of these people because of my rock and roll connections, and said, "Would Meatloaf come on and talk baseball with me?" And his publicist is like, "Yeah, he loves the Yankees. He'll come on." So he had an album to promote. When I Would Do Anything for Love came back, I met him at the Super Bowl. He played a gig before we had a team. It was the Arizona Super Bowl. I was on Radio Row. I had Dick Schaap on the show, like really cool people, but we didn't have a team yet. It was, the team was about to come here. Marvin was on the field, the Neil O'Donnell, Barry Switzer Super Bowl at Sun Devil Stadium. And at that Super Bowl, Meatloaf was, he had a number one song then. You can Google it. It's January 95 or not. Yeah, January 95. Let me get this right.
Probably.
That sounds right. Yeah. No, it was February. It was January 96. January 96, 95 season. The team was coming to Baltimore, but wasn't named. Yep. And there was a lot of ish going on. It was a mess. Yep. So Meatloaf's playing concerts that week, which is sort of like making an appearance, play one thing for the league, then had a concert at an arena. And he was a big act. And I wound up in front of him hanging out. And on that show, there was a guy in Phoenix who killed it. He was invited up on stage by Meatloaf, and Meat had done sports radio with this guy. So it had some fun with him in Phoenix. And the radio guy said, "I can do the Rizzuto part on stage." And I heard the guy do it, and he killed it. "Well, the batter's up and every round first and about second. Well, no, safe second." So that whole thing, right? Stop right there. So the guy kills it on stage in front of 8,000 people outside in this amphitheater in Phoenix. It's 85 degrees. Steelers fans over here, Cowboys fans. I had a terrible towel. Shh, don't tell anyone. I hated the Cowboys then. So I hate the Steelers too, but you had to pick a side. And you're at the Super Bowl. So right. Meatloaf and I get to talking about this guy. He's like, "Yeah, man, I did his show." And, you know, and Meat had done my show. And I had never met him, but he had done the show the summer before. So, and he's Aparicio, man, I love your cousin. He was a baseball guy. You know, that's why we're all. So I said to him, I might be able to do that, but I don't think. He's like, well, if you can do it, I'll let you do it. And I'm like, you don't mean that. He's like, nah, but you can't screw it up. You know, like, so he says this to me in January. Okay. Comes on the show in April for the Rock and Jock Spectacular, which is what we called it. By then, it's on wheels. Geddy Lee's calling in, Jay Wise calling in, Rick Nielsen, Steve Whiteman's calling in. I don't know. Is it? I tried to get Huey Lewis because he liked baseball. I don't think he never called in, but I had guests, right? So it was a big show, and we have it on cassette tape, just in case you're wondering.
Yeah, right.
Right. So Meat calls in, and we get into it on the air about the Yankees and the Orioles and Messina's pitching. And by then, he had done the All-Star game in '94, and I had met him there too. He played in the Rock and Jock game there. So maybe I met him there too. I don't know, but I got to know him, you know, and I would, every couple months he would show up on my show or be playing a show. I saw him at DAR Constitution Hall, Patriot Center, Merriweather, backstage pictures. How you doing? How's Jimmy Key look this year? I need to know. I need some inside. Ripken, you know, Brady Anderson's going to go play for the Indians. You talked to Tony Gwynn lately, you know, like it was like that. So he says to me on the Rock and Jock show, are you going to come down and do the Rizzuto thing? And I'm like, I'm going to try. I'm not really good at remembering. I couldn't remember Casey at the bat. I would have screwed that up, you know? So I've rehearsed incessantly for 6 weeks. It's August and the show, whenever the show was, right? It was that summer. The show comes to town. And dude, I rehearsed on a tape recorder because there was no other way to do it. And I was really trying to do it. And I went down to Merriweather at 2 p.m. The band's on stage. This is no shit, dude. This is serious. This is the real sound check at 2:15 on a summer day. Everybody's in sweatpants and shorts and lights, testing the lights. Boom, boom, boom. I mean, so there's a little of that going on. And I get up on stage and they go boom, 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 monitor, singers, drummer, bass player, Meat. I did it first time, stumbled halfway through. Good try. Let's try it again. Maybe you can get it. Stumbled out of the gate the second time.
Yeah, right.
Blew it up. He's like, dude, it's going to be great on your show if you screw this up, but I'm not going to let you screw it up on stage. So if you can't do it, we'll have fun with it. Don't want you to feel bad. It's really, and he kept saying, really hard to do. Like,
right.
You're not going to be able to do this. That's what he kept saying to me. You're not, like, that guy in Phoenix is an outlier. You watched him do it. Nobody can do this, dude. Like, he was like of that mindset. He was not of the, he was encouraging and he was allowing me to do it as shtick. But the last time I blew it up, and all I remember is I'm up on stage in an empty Merriweather. I looked over and the bass player took his bass and shot me with it. And the drummer, like, you know, went in on me, and I might as well laid there and died in front of Meatloaf on stage, Merriweather.
Right.
And it's 3 p.m. He's like, ah, come on back, man. I'll get you a beer and a sandwich. We'll talk some baseball. And I had to go on the show. Mark Messina and I don't know if it was Spiro, Haney, Allen, somebody in that era, did the show. And I had to call in backstage, hand the phone to Meatloaf, and have Meatloaf make fun of how I just got annihilated on stage. So I just want to tell you that one. I had to tell somebody, but that's my Meatloaf
good
story.
See, in today's world, there would be video of it. It would be on YouTube, tweeted, all that stuff. And I don't know how I really feel about that. You know, like, it would be great to watch you fall apart like that and
fail,
have fun at your expense. But at the same time, I just had to use my imagination, right, to like picture all the things that you were telling me. And that's probably a tool that I want to continue to have as I grow older. And if everything's videoed, we don't need to use our imagination anymore. So I'm kind of glad there wasn't.
Well, here's the thing. You know? Like Amanda Payton Julian, who's still my Facebook friend, is one of the most beautiful person in the world and has beautiful cats and lives down in Texas. She was the marketing manager. Gene Parker's still there. I sort of, now that I'm recollecting this story, I drove down. This is like 1996. So my son is in the pictures. He's 12. He's 11. I mean, if you saw the pictures, he's prepubescent. Right. He was little, right. You know? Right. So it was 1995. And me and Mark, we have the ornithologically correct hat, you know, Meatloaf wore the Oriole hat. And we're hanging out backstage by the buses and basketball, the old backstage area there. But what I remember is I parked my car and like Amanda's like, "You ready for this? Are you ready? You're going to be okay, right?" We walk. Gene's like, "I'm betting on you, Ness. I think you can do it." You know, like, and I got up there and just bombed in front of 28 people and the roadies. But it was just, I wanted to crawl in a hole. I mean, I really wanted to do it, but it just was really hard to do. A lot harder. Yeah. And that's a challenge for you, right? Like, you've heard the song, right? "I remember every little thing that even happened only yesterday." I could sing his part better. Better than I could do. "Well, the batter's up at first. Oh, save a second." And you had to do it to the video. You remember the video of Rizzuto?
That's why he doesn't do that part. He makes you do that part. And then.
Correct. It's really hard to do. Right. And whoever that guy is in Phoenix, I salute you, man. I salute you. That's all I can say. Bill Cole from Cole Roofing's here. We're telling old stories. And tell me what you're doing. Are you fixing roofs at this point? I mean, it's cold out. It's a little wet. It's a little dry. You know, what's going
Weather's
on?
Tough. Weather's definitely tough. You know, finding the materials is still challenging. But, you know, it's you're going through that, building the hope so that we can get to spring that's eternal, you know, that whole kind of concept, right? Like, things are lining up, everybody's gearing up for a great 22, and everyone's very optimistic because we haven't just been in this year long enough for it to be pessimistic. So
I think better weather's coming.
I would have to assume that, although it might get worse before it gets better. I don't know, but I mean,
there is a part of spring that, like, I see it over the horizon a little, bit. And that's me Super Bowl talking or thinking I'm going to be in a ballroom in LA all next week or whatever. I'm going to come back. It's going to be cold here. There's going to be work to do and like all that. And I don't feel like zipping off to a beach. I feel very focused. You know, obviously what I'm doing, Baltimore Positive, I'm putting crab cake towards. Like, I find this solitude. You and I have talked about this a lot. And I know for some people it's been suicidal, right? To be stuck alone or to be certainly stuck in a bad situation with people.
Also,
the confinement of all of it, right? But there is a part of it for creative people that has made that's worked for me in some bizarre way.
So, but I mean, for 22, like, got the Olympics in a week or two, whatever. That's fun. Love the Olympics.
So you don't want me to talk about the corruption in the China part or the no?
I don't know. Yeah, there's lots of baggage there, but it's something else to watch on TV, right? So it's exciting, and you
not
watch
the turf
all these
right now,
right? Nothing really.
That's the unnormal part of the play, right? And baseball's like in a lockout, and I'm supposed to pretend that they didn't move the seats in left field. By the way, I haven't had you on since left field, have I?
No,
dude, I did. You skipped last week. And I talked left field with everybody at length. I mean,
I saw that.
Rob Neyer, I had Marty Conway, who's brokenhearted. Janet Marie works for the Dodgers, but like, she's speechless. And I don't know what to even say about them ripping the, they got to get people back to the ballpark. I mean, I keep going back to this, to the original thing, which is fix the team and get people back. And I've talked a lot of baseball the last 2 weeks, and you know, when the Ravens get, even with Wink Martindale and all that going on, I've talked a lot of baseball here because that's what it feels like you should be doing. I mean, they put Big Poppy in the Hall of Fame the other night, and didn't
put Bonds and Clemens.
Yeah,
on their last
or
their
Schilling.
Last attempt.
I mean, and look, listen, I'm not going to sit here and pimp it for Kurt.
No, I think that there's just so much there, and it's so goofy, and no one really gives a shit. So who cares?
With the Hall of Fame, you mean?
Well, yeah, with like baseball in general, really. Like, I know in every town that has a team, you know, you've got this core group who are diehards forever. But
But you and I were supposed to be that guy.
I guess.
I mean, I had the guy on from Bel Air Sports Cards. He's having an event next week. So free shout out for him. And nice guy, Mel Lundgren. Never met him. He's from Erie, Pennsylvania, has a card store. We were talking about old cards and Roberto Clemente and Brooks Robinson and like all and what kids like in Pokemon and new issues and the value of a Patrick Mahomes autograph and like all of that. Right. Yeah. And I had Ray Bachman on 2 weeks ago, and he like was the biggest Eddie Murray fan and baseball fan, and said, you know, baseball's good the way it was, and I like my Eddie Murray and Cal Ripken stuff, my Memorial Stadium poster, and I don't really identify with it. And I'm thinking to myself, my God, wake up, Major League Baseball. We're the people that built the thing that you remember as being great, and it's not great anymore, and there's nothing about it that I can sit here and say that it's great. And I lived downtown for 19 years and it cost me a lot of money to sell my place because it wasn't great and people weren't coming anymore. And it wasn't putting 3 million people into the city, and it's shameful. And I don't know what's going to change about that, dude. And I certainly don't think they see the light in regard to the Hall of Fame or in regard to labor negotiations right now, or in regard to when they're putting their tickets on sale, or in regard to effing Sarasota over by not having a spring training after knowing that would be the first thing to go in any labor deal. And they fight every 5 or 6 years anyway. So how reliable is your Ed Smith Stadium experience? I don't know, man. I'm so turned off by it, but I can't stop talking about it because my body clock makes me do it, Billy. You know, it does.
I can appreciate that. It's just such a non-topic in my universe that, and doesn't
your
seem
guys, your roofing guys, do you want? I mean, do they wear Oriole hats?
Yeah, of course, but that's a civic logo.
They're not listening to the game with
That's
Chuck
like
Thompson
I got
on Tuesday night from Milwaukee.
I got to put a hat on, and if I wear this, it's a, you know, it's the
percentage
civic
of your guys that go to work every morning to know whether the Orioles won or lost the night before. That's a real basic question.
Less than 10% is my guess.
Okay. Enough said. Bill Cole's here, Cole Roofing. We can talk about other things. Cause I mean, that blows my mind, but it also explains to me why I don't have a Rock and Jock show with Meatloaf anymore. Right. And just seek out Eddie Vedder to come on the show to talk baseball, which I'd love to do. Right. Or Jeff Amon or guys that who are celebrities that like baseball or whatever, but the worm is turned on how much I need to talk about it or focus on it in regard to the political stuff I do or the civic stuff or having musicians like Meatloaf or JY from Styx on the show. This used to be geared toward that. And this is a time with Super Bowl and body clock and off season that for most of my life, unapologetically to some degree, this is what we did, right?
Well, I don't think you'll have any shortage of people wanting to promote stuff at the Super Bowl. I don't think that's a thing that ever goes out of favor and never, you know, there's no shortage of that. So
you're predicting I'm going to have a good time at the Super Bowl?
Well, it certainly sounds like you're going in with pretty low expectations. And my experience is when I set my expectations really low, I usually have a phenomenal time because I was just prepared for such a terrible.
Hold on. Let's go to the blackboard. Bill Cole's secret to life, set expectations low to create more value and happiness.
Right. Exactly. but I mean.
And people wonder why I have you on the show.
It's also this concept that people still starve to sit with others, right?
Oh, dude, if I have 10 great conversations in LA, if I have one and a half really fun connections with people that I get to see their eyes again and be in the, you know, I went to Pappas the other day and I met Luke. And Luke and I had a crab cake, literally, and just sat in a room for the first time in 2 years.
Right,
and we were like, literally. And when I went in, we were all wearing masks. And at the front door at Pappas on the left, there's a whole wall collage. And it's the little Polaroids of customers in the store, right? Like we've seen it a million times. Everybody's smiling over a crab cake at the bar, wearing a funny hat for the Halloween party, for the Christmas, the eggnog, whatever. Mothers, fathers, old people, young people, black people, white people, Greek people, eating spanakopita, you know, like pictures. Yeah. And I said to the ladies there, and we're all wearing masks, I said, I just miss seeing people smile like that. You know what I mean? Right? I can't wait for summer. We go outside and at least see people smile a little bit. So there's a little bit of that for me, that when I sat with Luke the other day, there was a feeling of like, I miss a connection with just sitting and talking to people, like even with you and with the county executive up in and Bel Air at Conrad's as well. I'm looking forward to getting back out. So I'm upbeat at this point. Yeah. I mean, much more upbeat than we've been this week in the city and where we are. And I am upbeat about going to the Super Bowl. I'm not going to go out there with a bad attitude. You know, I can control my attitude. That part I know.
Right. It'll be good. You'll have a good time. I'm glad you're going. We have to find some stuff, right? We have
me and Joe Burrow, Jimmy and Joe's and X's and O's underdogs this week. Let's go.
Okay. All right.
I think for the Rams, because like, it'll be more fun to be there if the Rams are in it, I think.
Yeah.
It would have been more fun in Minnesota if the Vikings were there and not the Eagles.
I mean, I just was kind of, I got a buddy in Rochester, so I was sort of on the Buffalo train. That would have been all right.
Yeah, I mean, poor Rasig. Bill Cole Roofing, Gordian Energy. I'd hold the mug up, but I can't find it because I moved this week. I would shave, but I can't find the razor. You can find him at Cole Roofing, and he's at the front of WNST and BaltimorePositive.com.